I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about what it takes to help students who have dropped out of school find their way back. We're going to talk about dropout recovery schools. We're going to talk about helping young people turn their lives around. My guests will be Scott Bess, CEO of Goodwill Education Initiatives, Jonathan Gates, Director of Excel Center West, and Daniel Igita, an Excel student. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Twitter is WFYI. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu. And by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about dropout recovery schools today on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Twitter is WFYI, and Facebook is No Limits WFYI. And I should say, as we're talking about this subject, WFYI is dedicated to increasing high school graduation rates and is working with many community partners through its American Graduate Initiative. Well, my guests today all have experience in this area, starting with Scott Bess, who is the CEO of Goodwill Education Initiative. Scott, welcome to the program.
Yeah, John, thank you very much. On behalf of Goodwill and the Excel Centers, thrilled to be here and really have been happy to participate with the American Graduate Project over the years. It's a great deal for us. Thank you.
Oh, good. It is good to have you here, and thank you for your participation in that. We also have with us Jonathan Gates, who is the director of Excel Center West. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. Pleasure being here. Looking forward to the conversation today.
And Daniel Igita, who is an Excel student. Welcome to the program, Daniel.
Thank you, John.
It's good to have you here as well. Well, let's talk a little bit, and I'll let everybody kind of chime in here as the spirit moves him. Define a dropout recovery school for me? I'll start with Scott.
Yeah, it's a great question. So, dropout recovery school is a way for students who have interrupted their high school for any number of reasons to come back to school and get an actual, in our case, Indiana high school diploma, not a GED, but an actual high school diploma with all the things that go along with that. And I think that's the opportunity that we took on to create that for students has been overwhelming for us. We knew that the need was out there. We weren't sure what the demand was. As it turns out, the demand was incredibly high, and we're just happy to be playing a part in that.
How long have you been doing this?
This is we're in our fourth year. We started in the fall of 2010 with one site, one location, and now we have 9 sites and almost 3,000 students.
How did you come about the idea of doing this? I mean, of really saying, okay, we can make an impact trying to work with dropouts.
Well, as you know, Goodwill historically has worked with people who have needed a kind of a hand up. And one thing that we've known throughout the years is that a lack of a high school diploma is a huge barrier towards getting any kind of meaningful employment. And so as we started looking across the landscape of the city and the state, recognizing there are literally hundreds of thousands of people without a high school diploma, and they just don't get to play in a lot of the economic development happenings that are occurring. And so we wanted to create a school specifically for people who had dropped out. And that's very different than a traditional high school. And we designed the school really from the ground up to accommodate those needs, and it's paid off.
Jonathan, I think that's your cue. tell me about how that this school is structured.
It
deals specifically with people.
We do a lot of things different, but I think the thing that really kind of sets the Excel Center apart is that we treat it as a school first, and we have students coming to us who are looking for an education, and that's what's important. Now we do things to accommodate their unique situations. We have daycares in our schools. We front load a lot of our classes and make them longer and make it over a shorter period of time so that they can earn their credits. So, for example, a student might sit in a biology class for 3 hours during a day, but they are able to then complete that work over the course of 8 weeks versus spending 16 weeks or 20 weeks that you would at a traditional school at an hour a day. So we do a lot of things like that in order to accommodate our unique learners. And that's what I think kind of helps our school fit the need that we have.
How do you define success?
There's a lot of ways. I mean, the number one way that we end up defining our success is graduates. And we define it based on, are they successful after they leave us? I mean, that's really what's important. I mean, if our students are leaving us and they're not, as
yeah,
Scott just
said.
Yeah,
if it's just a piece of paper.
If it's just a piece of paper, that's great. I mean, it's great they have the piece of paper.
And that they learned.
But yeah. It's what happens next. What do they do next? And so we prepare them for whatever's coming next.
What is your rate of graduation?
It's an interesting question. It's an interesting way to calculate things.
The fact that you're obviously dealing with a difficult challenge.
There. Right. So from the Excel Center West standpoint, we have 334 students, and this year we're looking at graduating about 50 of them. So from a graduation rate standpoint in a first year, that's about a sixth of your students. Mm-hmm. But the graduation rate calculation is interesting because you have students entering your school at all different times.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout the year, we might have 4 or 5 different times.
So you don't necessarily have a cohort in the freshman, sophomore, junior.
Correct.
The old classifications don't have as much meaning in terms of what you're doing. Well, Daniel, you're the one who's on the other end of this spectrum here right now. Tell me a little bit about your story. I mean, first I'd like to know what happened in school the first time around. Presumably you were a dropout, right?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me about what led you to drop out in the first place.
Well, first of all, I'm from Colombia.
Okay.
I came here like in 2009 to live with my dad.
Okay.
So I was going to Pike High School. And then I was like working on my paperwork, but my dad didn't help me a lot with those. So when I was like getting close to be graduate, I was like getting like invitations for scholarships because I was playing soccer.
Okay.
And then when I asked my dad, like, Dad, I have like this opportunity of a scholarship, I need to go. And he was like, no, you can go, because a lot of stuff, like being around like paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
So I was finished my junior year in Pike. That was in 2011. And then he didn't give me any answer about my papers.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, I have like two ways. I come back to Colombia and renew my visa and come back again, or I just stay here. And
which did you do?
I came back. Actually, I went back to Colombia.
Okay.
And then it took me like 2 years to come back, like because they're renewing my visa and then like earning some money to come back here. Well, this like last year in 2013, I came back again.
Okay.
And then I tried to enroll again with Pike, but they didn't let me enroll with them.
What was the reason they said you couldn't enroll?
They put me like, you know, a school have like average of graduation, dropout people, stuff like that. So they put me on there. So my name was like in the system, like around USA.
Okay.
So they just told me like, no, you can enroll. You have to find another way.
To graduate?
Yeah, to graduate.
Or do the GED routers.
Yeah.
Or something. Or
like,
so how did you come to Excel then?
Well, actually, there was like a teacher. She had like some information, some like sheet of papers. So
mm-hmm.
she handled that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, okay, this is like one option. Because at first I didn't know I was like in the whole system. So I was like, oh, this is like a high school for adults. So I won't like fit in there. So I was like trying to look for another high school, like North Central or some other.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they told me that I was like in the whole system, I was like, okay, let's just try this. And actually that was like the next week.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, let's just give it a chance. You don't have to pay anything.
Mm-hmm.
when I get there, like, I was like, okay, let's try. It's just a try. And then it was pretty good.
We are talking about dropout recovery schools here on No Limits. Please join the conversation. Give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Twitter is WFYI, and Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Well, tell me a little bit, Jonathan, I'm going to throw this one back at you. It would seem to me with this approach, you have to figure out why to solve the problem, to get the students back on course, you got to solve the figure out why they dropped out in the first place and solve that problem or whatever that stressor was. How do you go about doing that?
So kind of going back to your first question to us is, what do we do kind of differently?
Mm-hmm.
At each of our centers, we employ life coaches. And the life coach's role is really just to figure that out. It's to figure out what stopped them in the first place, and let's make sure that doesn't happen again. I mean, the stories vary. I mean, sometimes it's had to go to work. Sometimes it's had children. Sometimes it's school just wasn't for me when I was 16 years old and I had more important things to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the life coaches help reprioritize and help them work through those barriers that could have stopped them before.
What's the age range of the students who are involved?
Yeah, so our age range has gone all the way from our youngest student being 16 all the way up to 60. So we've had a wide range of students.
What does that do in terms of the teaching?
A lot of people ask that question.
I'm curious because I could see how it would be an enriching experience, but also, you know.
It's an enriching experience, and it's still one that I get to experience, which is another thing that I really enjoy about the Excel Center. And good teaching is good teaching. And so if a teacher can teach at high school and they're good at it, they're going to be good teaching in the Excel Center. They're going to be good teaching anywhere. So it doesn't vary too much, to be honest with you. A lot of people think it's going to be vastly different and wildly different. It's not. Teaching is still teaching.
Well, and Scott, I've got to ask. I mean, it sounds like this has had a pretty spectacular, you say you've been doing it for 4 years, and it's a pretty spectacular growth curve here. You've gone from one center to nine. How do you fund that?
Yeah, so when we started off, we were a charter school, and so we were funded like every other charter school was, funded through the K-12 formula. As we grew, we attracted some attention, and people, I frankly didn't realize that Indiana does not really have an age cap on school attendance.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we were doing was, you know, perfectly legit, and we just kind of took advantage of something that was there. Most people didn't realize it was there. And so at a policy level, legislators last year got involved and said, look, let's separate this out. We really believe in the concept. We love the idea. We want it to continue, but let's not put it in the K-12 funding formula. Let's separate it out. So we are actually today a separate line item in the state budget that allows our school plus some others that exist like us to function. And so we're funded separately on a per student basis, but it's a separate, so we're not part of the K-12. We're just a separate item in the budget.
So it's a separate line item for the state. Is it diverting funds from education?
No.
Or it's an entirely separate entity?
It is entirely separate. And I would give full credit to Senator Kinley, who really took the lead on this and who believes passionately in the idea and the concept. Has done a wonderful job of shepherding this through the session. It's been terrific.
And I should ask, you say that there is a per student rate. What is that rate?
Yeah, our flat rate is $6,600 per student. So it's slightly less if you look at urban schools. It's less than what they would get there. And we also do not get, there's vocational funding and special education funding and facilities funding, and we don't get any of that. It's just a flat rate of $6,600.
Jonathan, what students, are there criteria for admission to Excel? What are there any students you will say no to?
No, we don't say no. We sometimes we'll have conversations with students who are more traditional aged about, is it the best fit right now? We'll always have those conversations for our 17 and 18 year olds. But no, we are a high school that accepts people that are of high school age. So anybody who meets that criteria can come and enroll.
So why is the, like you said, there's a range of 16 to age 60. Why is the 16-year-old there rather than at another school?
It sometimes is the reality of their situation. They may have run into, it's a very rare exception that we have a 16-year-old, but there's sometimes they run into the issue of childcare. Sometimes they've run into an issue of I'm living on my own and I need flexible scheduling and I need to be able to come to school half a day and work the rest of the day. We have those situations arise.
We are talking about dropout recovery schools here on No Limits. Please join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI, and Twitter is WFYI. My guests are Scott Best, CEO of Goodwill Education Initiatives, Jonathan Gates, who is director of Excel Center West, and Daniel Igita, an Excel student. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about dropout recovery schools here on No Limits. My guests are Scott Bess, who is the CEO of Goodwill Education Initiatives, Jonathan Gates, who's the director of Excel Center West, and Daniel Igita, who is an Excel student. And I should say, WFYI is dedicated to increasing high school graduation rates and is working with many community partners through its American Graduate Initiative. All right, Daniel, I'd like to talk with you a little bit more about your experience. I'm assuming you're happy at the Excel Center. What is it you like about it?
Well, like the difference like between Excel Center and like a Korean high school is like it's like less people and you have like coaches, I mean. So they help you, they try to talk to you, like if you're like doing like bad or you have like bad grades, they're like they talk to you like, okay, what's happened? They can sketch like they may make an idea to help you. Also they they try to like give you like the best. Like they are always like motivating you. They are like talking to you. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are really good, like the environment.
Well, take me through a day here for you. I mean, when do you go to school?
Well, I start at 11.
You start at 11?
Yeah, and I finish at 5.
At 5. And why is that schedule set for
you? Well, I start like 11, like my English class, mm-hmm. like until 1. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I have like a free period because I already finished with my algebra class. Like mm-hmm. my algebra credits, mm-hmm. and then after that, I'm getting my certification called Higher Tech.
Mm-hmm. What do you want to do?
Well, after I finish the Excel, well, I want to become a dentist.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're looking at college after and then dental school.
Yeah, actually, I'm playing like soccer to be able to get a scholarship. I'm playing for that club right now.
Oh, so you're looking at an athletic scout. Do you have Jonathan? I mean, are there sports teams associated with this too, or is it?
Unfortunately, no. We don't have sports.
I was going to say
right
putting
now.
The 60-year-old out there on the field might be a little problematic. But so you start at 11. You go until five. Why does this work better for you than a traditional school system?
Well, like, as I tell you, you have like coaches, and then they make your schedule like depending on your like schedule. Like if you have to work, they try to find like the best like time to give you like classes. Like for example, you work like in the afternoon, mm-hmm. so you will have like your classes like from 9 to 11 or 9 to 10.
How do you schedule the classes, Jonathan? I mean, it sounds like that would be a bit of a logistical nightmare that if you've got to work around people's work schedules, is school perpetually in session or?
I mean, like you said, it was a logistical nightmare to figure this kind of stuff out. I mean, the best way to compare it is really to the community college aspect. Mm-hmm. We offer classes at set times, and then we try and maximize the number of classes we're offering when students can come. So each one of our sites will vary. For example, at the at Excel Center West, we know we have a lot of morning students. So okay. we are going to front load a lot of our classes in the morning so we can maximize as many students as possible in the classes. Our afternoons get a little bit lighter because, frankly, we have a lot of students that have parents, and parents want to get home and get their kids off the bus. So we have a lot of parents that need to leave and go do that. And then we do run evening classes as well. We run a session from 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock at night. And that session is, again, dependent on what the students' needs are at that time.
Where do you find your teachers?
We find teachers through the traditional paths that a lot of other schools will find them. We'll post job opportunities. A lot of word of mouth, just like any other school, finds teachers.
What are the requirements to teach?
It's the same as any other school. Have to have a teaching license, bachelor's degree, and things like that.
Okay, and do you have to work toward the master's degree as well, or?
Don't have to. We have a lot of teachers that do.
Okay. Scott, are there, I mean, it sounds to me like part of the reason these schools have some success is the greater flexibility that they've broken out of the, 7:30 to 2:30 or 8 to 3 schedule. So that they can kind of meet students where they are. Are there lessons here for other more traditional schools? I mean, I think we all would agree that even though Daniel's having success now, in the long term, it would have been better altogether if he hadn't had to drop out in the first place.
No, that's a great point. I think, long term, frankly, we'd be thrilled if in the end there was no need for us because nobody was ever dropping out of the schools that they were in, because that's always the best solution. And I think the answer that we bring perhaps to some of that problem is that you really do have to be flexible, and you have to look at the barriers that students have in front of them, and you have to find creative ways around those barriers, because that people usually don't drop out because of academic issues. They drop out because of all kinds of things happening in their life. And I'd say most traditional school corporations do a terrific job with a large percentage of their students. Maybe it's even 90% or 80%. But there's always those students whose life situation doesn't fit the norm. And those are the students that wind up dropping out. And I think that the more schools can find ways to accommodate those differences, they'll find that their graduation rates will go up and there'd be less need for Excel Centers.
What are the reasons that students drop out? I mean, I'm assuming in terms of if you're launching this, you did some study.
We did a lot of study. And again, it's fascinating to me. And again, I could say, with almost 3,000 students, we probably have almost 3,000 reasons that people dropped out. Jonathan mentioned a couple earlier, right? I mean that, someone had to go to work to support their family, someone who got pregnant or someone who got somebody pregnant and had to go to work to support the baby. People who have, drug and alcohol issues in high school, people who they've moved around a lot and they just got disconnected from school and they just fell behind and fell through the cracks. All of those kinds of things happen. The most interesting one to me was someone who got mad at their government teacher in their senior year of high school, the only credit they needed. They got mad, dropped out, and then 10 years later came back to us, right? So, was literally one credit away from graduating high school and just, couldn't
handle.
Can
you help me get that credit?
Couldn't handle the issue, right? Behind.
Yeah. And how do you – what's the most common one, though? I mean, I would assume that there are certain themes you have to deal with and certain specific approaches that you've created. Should I throw that one to Jonathan?
Well, I'll take a shot, and then I'll look to Jonathan to kind of fill in. Usually it's – I had to go to work. Mm-hmm. Wasn't really connected with my school, and there were all these financial pressures, and I needed to help my family or needed to support my family, or I was on my own. That's kind of the big number one child. Whether again it's a girl who had a child or a boy who fathered a child, that kind of ranks in there second. I don't know, John, if you have others.
Yeah. So, I think one of the things that resonates with me when you ask that question is with 9 schools, I think it kind of depends on where they are. Mm-hmm. So each of our 9 schools really takes on the personality of the community that they're in.
So how about with Excel Center West? Personality there.
Yeah. So we have a lot of English language learners who disconnected from school and just ran into those types of barriers. And so they needed a place to come back to and try again.
So in terms of that, and I probably should invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. But in terms of how you structure that, and then Scott, I'm going to ask you to give me an overview on the other schools and their challenges. What do you do differently then to meet the needs of those English learners?
Yeah,
is it more English classes, basically?
Yeah, so I mean, I have to give credit to the Excel Center West staff in taking on this challenge. We had a pretty good understanding that coming into the west side of Indianapolis, we'd run into a lot of English language learners and a lot of people who needed that skill set. We didn't realize how big it would be. We're upwards of 50% of our school falls into that category. Now, within that 50%, we bounce around how proficient they are. But we had to restructure some of our classes. We had to move one of our staff people to be a full-time ENL instructor. Mm-hmm. English is a new language instructor. And we've had to really build in more intentional English teaching into our classes throughout all of them.
How large is your staff at Excel Center West?
So total, we're about 20.
Okay.
That includes everybody from our security to our drop-in center staff to our janitor. So everything, we're about 20.
And how many students do you have?
334.
So we're talking about...
Average what? Class size sits at about 18 right now.
Yeah, I was going to say a 16 to 1 ratio for student to staff member. Tell me, Scott, then about the different personalities to use of the different Excel centers, and was that a conscious thing that you're going to say, okay, we're going to create different entry points for different kinds of students?
Yeah, because I think it would have been frankly more efficient, like here in Marion County. We have almost 1,500 students here in Marion County. It would have been much more efficient to create one large building, but
pay the heating bill once.
That's
and all
right.
of that sort
but
of
you
stuff.
Lose you lose the effectiveness of it. Where Jonathan and his staff, they know every single student, and all the students know each other. And we wanted to keep that small school feel because we really want our students to feel connected. And I think that's why we've kind of replicated this. Our site in Decatur Township. Like West is mostly English language learners. A lot of Somali and Burmese refugees from the south side of Indianapolis are plugged in at that school. On the east side, we get a lot of students who have left either Warren Township or an IPS school. That one skews a little bit younger on some of the age groups. The same holds true somewhat in we have a school in the Meadows. A lot of pretty recent dropouts there. So again, and then our schools in Lafayette, Anderson, Kokomo, and Richmond. They really take on the personality of the communities that they're in.
So let's say we've got somebody listening right now who has dropped out of school and, is thinking, oh, this sounds like a pretty good option for me. How do they go about figuring out to do it, Scott?
Yeah, the first step is go to excelcenter.org.
And go ahead and give them that again.
Excelcenter.org.
Okay.
And you go there and there's an online application you fill out and that starts the process. That triggers somebody to get in contact. Figure out which school you want to go to, the timing, and as we have openings in, we can plug people in. We do rolling enrollment throughout the year, so as a spot opens up, we can plug somebody new into that.
And is there a cost to the Daniel equivalent to attending?
Yeah, that's the wonderful thing. There is no cost to the student. So along with the classes comes the daycare is free. We provide like in the case of Indianapolis, we'll provide Indigo bus passes to our students so they can get to and from school. And the life coaching is free. That's something that, again, to try and help people get connected as much as possible. And then the ultimate is, for us, is really, as Jonathan said earlier, what happens next? And so we spend a lot of time and effort and resource in getting that student, whether it's getting them into college or getting them through some type of a sort of industry certification so they can leave us with their diploma, with a certification, and go right into the workforce.
Where did the idea for the life coaches come from? I'll stay with Scott on that one.
Yeah, that was really, as we talked about things
because that
on,
sounds like that's one of the cornerstones of what you do here.
It's absolutely the key, and I'd say that grew out of our history at Goodwill. We have a long history of working with people with barriers, and so we were really able to apply some of the work that we had happened at Goodwill into the school setting because understanding it, unless we eliminate those barriers, we could create a wonderful academic environment. And if those barriers don't get worked on and addressed, they'll drop out again. And so that's really where the idea of the life coaches came from, was to try and what I term it is really helping our students become better problem solvers, right? Because there will always be barriers. Things will always happen. How you react to those really influences how successful you are. And I think our life coaches play a huge part in that.
Jonathan, how do you choose the life coaches?
it's an application process, and they kind of go through it, and we look for people that really have a track record of being able to connect and be able to build those relationships with students, because the thing that...
So are they part of the 20 staff members mm-hmm. you have?
Yep.
How many life coaches do you have then?
So it's an three full-time life coaches right now, but there's a total of 5 people in our building who have what we call...
I was going to say, that means they've got 110 students apiece to deal with.
Because we have 3 full-time, and then we have 2 more who serve as in that career college-type role that Scott was mentioning, in order to prepare people really for all those like checklist things that have to happen when you leave college, that a lot of us had, me had parents around to help us with, that people don't get the guidance for all the time.
How is a life coach? I mean, is it a counselor by a different name, or how does the role differ from what is a traditional
guidance counselor on steroids? So you think about a guidance counselor, then you think about attendance officer, you think about person that can help you schedule out how to manage your time. So it's all those things. So the role of coach really kind of embodies everything they do. There's a large aspect of their job that is the guidance counselor stuff. So whether it's the credits that they're earning, what the classes they have to take, and those kinds of things. And then the other big part of their job is, okay, so we have these students who have issues. How do we be proactive and help them overcome them early so that they don't drop out again, as Scott mentioned?
So are they trained in counseling services, basically, in social work, or is that one of the things you look for? Because it sounds like you could run up into a whole range of challenges here where, you know, it could be, you know, the traditional, which college should I be thinking about, to, oh, I think I just got my girlfriend pregnant and I'm not quite sure what to do here, to something that's even more serious, like I'm feeling overwhelmed and thinking about killing myself.
Right. I think one of the things that really captures the life coaches at West right now is they're all really innovative, and they're all connectors. Mm-hmm. So they're all able to think about problems and come to reasonable solutions. I think that's something that really defines our life coaches. Or they're able to connect students with the appropriate resources to do so, whether it's outside the school, whether it's somebody inside the school, because a lot of times we have people inside the schools that can help with those things. The affiliation with Goodwill is huge for us. I mean, it really helps in regards to getting those wraparound services to students so that they can be successful.
How do you match up the life coach with the students? I'm assuming it's not just willy-nilly, that you take a look at where the student is and say, this would be a good fit. What's that entry process?
Yeah, so for our college and career folks, we try and reserve those spaces for those students that are really close to graduating. We run 5 terms during a year, so students that are within 2 to 3 terms of graduating will typically be with those people, because there's just a lot of those paperwork things, whether it's the FAFSAs, whether it's the job applications, whether it's resumes, those types of things that need to get done so those people can really hone in and focus on those. During our IXL student orientations, which all of our new students go through, life coaches get a chance to meet all the new students, and they get a chance to really just find out who they connect with. And then if they have those connections, we're able to pair them up early on.
We are talking about dropout recovery schools here at No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. So, you know, in terms of the life coaches, Daniel, if you could real quickly, I mean, what sort of stuff do you talk about with your life coach?
Well, pretty much like when I'm going to be graduate, what are my, like, my credits, my GPA, what college can I apply to.
How often do you meet?
Well, it depends. Like, whenever you want to go, they are ready for you.
So it's like an open door thing.
Yeah, an open door.
And you can walk in. And how long is the line then?
Well, it depends. Sometimes they are like really busy, and sometimes they are like, oh, okay, come on.
We're talking about dropout recovery schools here on No Limits. My guests are Scott Bess of Goodwill Education Initiatives, Jonathan Gates of XL Center West, and Daniel Igita, who is an XL student. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about dropout recovery schools here on No Limits. My guests are Scott Bess, who is CEO of Goodwill Education Initiatives, Jonathan Gates, who is the director of XL Center West, and Daniel Igita, who is an XL student. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. Denise, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. What's on your mind?
I had a question. Maybe this is directly to the director of the school. He was talking about the diversity in the West Side area. I was wondering how many countries does he has represented in his school?
Good question. Thank you very much for the call, Denise. Jonathan, can you break down the demographics for?
I can do my best from memory. So, I know that we have somewhere in the ballpark of 15 to 19 different countries represented in our school right now. And those range from, we have a lot of Latin American countries, but it really spans the entire globe. We have students from China, Japan. We have a student from Iraq. We have some students from Jordan, from Guinea. So we are kind of all over the place.
How about, does that track pretty much with the overall for the nine schools, Scott?
Yeah, and it varies a little bit. So our Decatur location is very much, it's almost 50%, again, English language learners. And so, again, it reflects that, again, a lot of different ones, particularly Burmese and Somali, because that's a concentration down the south side of Indianapolis. Some of our other ones in some of our other communities where there's not as much diversity in the community, the school really looks a lot like the community. So Lafayette doesn't have as much. Richmond does not have as much in terms of ethnic diversity, across from different countries. But the biggest thing is all of our sites really reflect the communities that they're in.
How is the approach different, in terms of how the personality of the school from XL Center West to, say, the school in Richmond?
Yeah, it's
because you've made a point. A lot of these are integration issues or assimilation issues at XL Center West. Yeah. I'm guessing you've got a different kind of challenge.
Yeah, I mean, again, people from Indianapolis, if any of our Indianapolis sites are used to, people who live in Indy are used to, kind of a big city feel. In Richmond, which is a much smaller community, there it's very important for us to have people who are from Richmond on the staff, who know the city, who know the people, and can connect. And so, that's really the biggest difference I can say between the Indianapolis locations and our smaller locations in the other communities. So that is, it's really important to have people local in there.
We've gotten an email question from a listener who says, if Daniel could tell a student some advice, a student who's considering dropping out, what would that advice be?
Well, what can I say? If they have, a solid reason to drop out, they have to work because they have, somebody pregnant or they are pregnant or they're living by themselves, I mean, if you're going to drop out, go to XL Center. It's one of the best options.
And, is that a better option than, do you just get the traditional students, too, who for whatever reason, school is not working for them? How do you approach those kids, Jonathan?
Quite honestly, when that does happen, we don't get them for a couple of years. If school's not working out, they usually make that decision, and then it's kind of one of those epiphany moments when it's just like, I probably need to go back to school.
I may have taken a wrong turn here, and I got to find my way back.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotten a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Twitter is WFYI and Facebook is NoLimitsWFYI. Question was, is there a difference in the way, given all of those nationalities, you said between 15 and 19 at XL Center West, is there a difference in the way you have to do English instruction based on that? Is it more varied or are the principles pretty much the same? Jonathan, I'll start with you.
Yeah, and then Daniel can talk to doing the classes. No, I mean, it's with that many countries, it's about being conscious of who's in your class, because you have different countries and you have different backgrounds and you have to recognize those. And so when you approach, it's more about approaching people. And so when you approach people, you have to realize that they come with some type of background. And so it's being knowledgeable about those things and just doing your best to learn as much as you can. Obviously, with that many countries, we can't learn everything we would like to know, but we do our best to do so.
Daniel, what's that experience like? I mean, how many different native languages do you have in your English class?
Well, it's like a lot. Like people from Africa who speak like five languages, you know, they speak like French and then some other languages. They're like Spanish people. They're like Chinese people. I mean, it's a lot. But like teachers, they always try to help you. There's like some dictionaries that if they can make sense, they can help you. I mean, and it's still working, like my pronunciation and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they always try to get you like better. Like even talking, reading, writing. I mean, they help you.
Is it, you know, you came from a public school background,
yeah,
at Pike here in the city. And you're now at Excel, and it sounds like you're in a significantly multinational,
yeah,
school experience. Do you prefer that to, you know, Pike High School, while it is a diverse school,
yeah,
It still sounds like probably not as diverse on a per capita basis as this experience is. Which one do you prefer and why?
Well, I really like the Excel Center a little bit better because it's like less people, as I tell you before, and then you have like these coaches that you can be like one by one, and you, mm-hmm, can ask them like, how can I be ready like for college? And you know, they help you a lot. But in public schools, they are like too many people. I mean, they try to help you, but it's like really hard. You have to wait like too much time.
Is there a limit to this model, Scott? I mean, I've been remiss here. I mean, we're talking about 3,000 dropouts. How many dropouts does anybody know off? How many dropouts there are in the state of Indiana?
Yeah, roughly there's about 600,000 dropouts in the state of Indiana. Now, some of those are 80 years old and perfectly content.
Yeah, but you've reached one in 20. Then.
We have, and I think the key for us is how much we grow and where we grow. You know, across the state within the state, you know, some of it's dependent upon funding. Again, I would say that we enjoy a terrific relationship with the legislature, and they've been supportive in wanting this to grow, but wanting it to grow in a controlled fashion, which makes perfect sense. And so we're really helping to lay out a plan that says how many more of these should there be, where should they be, and when should they come into existence, kind of working hand in hand with the legislature to make sure it gets funded, but also to make sure that we expand it to allow, you know, people like Daniel and others across the state who just want a chance to come back to have that opportunity.
Where are you thinking about growing right now? I'm assuming from the tone of your, yeah, voice here, it sounds like, okay, we're at 9, but we're not stopping there.
Yeah, and there's no secrets across the state. If you look on the map of the state of Indiana and you see communities that are listed in bold, I mean, those are typically more urban type places that have a concentration, yeah, of population, and typically there's a pretty high level of dropouts there. And again, whether we go there and run a school like this, or somebody else may have a terrific idea like this and want to run a school similar. We think that the need is there, and it's certainly the demand is going to be there across the state. Whether we do it or somebody else does it, you know, we'd love to, but you know, others could do it as well. But we see this growing again into all the major urban areas of the state.
And it is tied then basically to urban areas. Is that does your business model not work if you have to take it to a rural area? Is there just not enough population?
Well, I think it would work. It changes a little bit. And, you know, in the urban areas, and again, in urban areas.
Because students do drop out. And
absolutely.
Sadly, teen pregnancies don't just occur in urban
across
areas.
The state. There are large populations in rural areas. The challenge there is transportation. If you're going to locate something, people are going to have to come not from 2 or 3 miles away, but from 20 or 30 miles away. But in a lot of those areas, they're used to driving to get groceries, to, you know, go to the doctors, to do the kinds of things you have to do to live anyway. So we see it as a possibility. We're not going to limit it just to urban areas, but you'll certainly see that's where some of the immediate growth would be, just because the need is so large, and it's a little easier to open where there's immediate access.
Jonathan, what is the would you say is the hardest thing about working at a dropout recovery school?
I mean,
I'm going to ask the other side of that too. So don't.
Yeah,
but
no,
but I think to give people an idea of the difference, what that, you know, the real challenge, the thing that, you know.
Right. I mean, the reality is we are working in a place where people have come to school once before a lot of times and they dropped out. So it's a pattern. It's about changing behavior. So when you're looking at changing habits and behavior, that's very difficult. So we try and wrap in as many services as we can and be proactive as we can. But at the end of the day, sometimes we don't get it done, and it's difficult. Now the flip side of that is that when students don't graduate from us, or they do end up leaving our school for whatever reason, we get a lot that come back and re-enroll.
How often do you lose one?
It kind of just depends from term to term. So we run our 5 terms over the course of a year, and we might have 5% of our population that just doesn't return for whatever reason.
So, So the retention rate can be a little bit of a challenge there. Is there an option in doing this if Daniel obviously is focused on trying to get a soccer scholarship playing? He says, you know, demands of what I'm doing with soccer right now, and maybe I've got a job, maybe I've got other demands. Can I take one of those periods off, that those 5 during the year, and then re-enter? Are you flexible enough to
the biggest thing for us, what it comes down to for our students, is you have to communicate with the staff at an Excel Center. If you communicate with the staff at the Excel Center, or Goodwill, for quite frankly, we can pretty much do our best to try and make anything happen. It's when those lines of communication aren't there and we don't know about things that we struggle with those types of things.
When you lose one, what's generally the reason?
Generally, I would say the reason we lose them is because we've lost all contact.
Okay.
And it's hard to know because we don't get in contact with them anymore.
So they're not being tracked. Do you try to do outreach if they don't come back and say?
We do. We try and do things like home visits. We'll go to their house and knock on the door and say, are you coming back to school or not? What's going on?
Yeah.
We try and target those the best we can because you don't want to go do.
Yeah, you don't want restraining orders or anything like that.
Yeah, you spend all your time doing it. So it's all about being targeted in that respect. So we'll send letters. We'll make phone calls. If they give us different numbers, we'll call those numbers too.
Well, and I guess I was getting at how much of it is that they can't get past the original issue, the one that got them to drop out the first time. How often is that the case based on what you know? And I heard what you were saying is that getting the precise reason is difficult.
And I may look to Scott to follow up with this one, but because quite frankly, we've only been open on the west side now for 7 or 8 months. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a lot of that information
the data.
For us.
Yeah. Scott, do you compile that sort of stuff?
Yeah, we do. We track, one of the things that's a little bit unique about us is we track all of our students, whether they're successful or whether they drop out. And we really try to do as much follow-up as we can. Clearly, with the ones who graduate, there we're tracking them into whether it's into college or whether it's into the workforce. And we're really keeping tabs on, are they being successful? Did they get a job that pays a wage that allows them to be self-sufficient? And we track that. If they need assistance from us, they can always come back. With the students who aren't successful, most of the time it traces back to the original issue. Again, maybe they had to go to work to support themselves or support their family. That problem still hasn't gone away.
Mm-hmm.
And if they get a chance to get a minimum wage job for 30 or 40 hours a week, a lot of times they'll jump on that, and then that interrupts their schooling. Even though it's not the long-term solution, they have a short-term problem.
You still have to eat short term. So
that's right. But as Jonathan said, we try to be as flexible as we can, and if they're working with us, we'll work with them.
And Jonathan, what's the best part? I mean, I asked you what the hardest part was. What's the best part of the job?
I mean,
of the work.
I think it really comes down to the people. I mean, that's what I'd say the best part of the work is, from the Excel Center West staff that's out there to the students. It really just comes down to getting to interact with with a group of people that, one, are passionate about what they're doing, and then from a student side, a group of people who have come back to really make their lives better and make significant gains.
We've gotten a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. It says, are there licensed people connected to these schools in case a student experiences a tragic issue or needs social services assistance?
Yeah, I think it comes back to the whole idea of the coaches being a connector. So if we get into those types of situations, we will do our best to get them connected with the resources they need.
And in that case, it means, you know, sometimes knowing when to call 911, basically.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yep.
Now, you'll probably get are there challenges in terms of, like, with a lot of public schools and all of that, they talk about security challenges and discipline challenges. Do you have that as much or less?
I'd say generally we have it less across the Excel centers. Yep. I mean,
Is it because the students on average are older? Or?
They're older. They've had those experiences. You'll get them here and there. But, yeah, I'd say there's definitely less.
So, Daniel, real quickly, tell me a little bit. I know you want to be a dentist. Have you started looking at colleges? How far away from graduation are you now?
Well, I'm supposed to be graduated by August.
Okay.
But I'm still like playing soccer to be like recruited for any like college or university.
Okay.
That's like my main point. But yeah, I'm doing like some research.
So do you want to play Division One?
Yeah, Division
One. Because that's
yeah.
where the scholarships are, Division One college.
Yeah.
College soccer. What's your dream school?
Well, I'm thinking about IU.
IU?
Yeah, or IUPUI because, you know, they have like Division One. So I can get like more scholarships, like almost a full ride with them.
And have you started talking with them at all? Or?
Well, I have been trying to talk with the coach of IUPUI,
mm-hmm.
but I haven't reached him.
Okay.
Reached him.
Well, maybe he is listening right now.
Yeah.
Scott, real quickly, if we've got someone who has dropped out of school and wants to re-engage in some fashion, how should she or he go about doing that?
Yeah. Again, great question. And the first step is to go to the excelcenter.org. Again, that's the excelcenter.org and apply online. It's a very short application. You just walk through it. That will trigger some other process that will happen. People will get in contact with them, find out which school they want to go to, get a sense of timing set up, get them scheduled for an orientation. And then from there, it's really up to them.
We've been talking about the dropout recovery schools. My guests have been Scott Best, Jonathan Gates, and Daniel Igita. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.